Drink Element is a healthy alternative to sugary electrolyte drinks. Each grab-and-go stick pack replaces essential electrolytes with no sugar, no coloring, no artificial ingredients, or any other junk. Element is thrilled to be releasing a new limited-time flavor this November, Element Milk Chocolate. I drink Element every day to support my workouts and being on the court and in the classroom. As a member of our community, Element has a special offer for you. Claim your free Element sample pack. You only cover the cost of shipping. Get yours today at drinkelement, that's LMNT.com/contacts.
Our next partner has a product I use every day. I started taking Athletic Greens because I wanted a simple all-in-one solution as opposed to the ever-changing variety of supplements I have been taking for as long as I can remember. Sometimes up to 3 ramekins a day full of pills and powders trying to find the right formula for peak performance. Now that I've been taking Athletic Greens for a few months, I love it and I will never go back. With one delicious scoop of Athletic Greens, you're absorbing 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole food, sourced superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens to help you start your day right. This special blend of ingredients supports your gut health, your nervous system, your immune system, your energy, recovery, focus, and aging. I take one scoop in the morning on an empty stomach and an additional one in the evening when I'm feeling run down. I've seen such a difference in my own performance that I recently ordered additional AG1 for the rest of my family to use. It costs you less than $3 a day, you're investing in your health, and it's cheaper than your cold brew habit and supports better sleep quality and recovery in addition to mental clarity and alertness. Right now, it's time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition. It's just one scoop and a cup of water every day. That's it. No need for a million different pills and supplements to look out for your health. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free 1-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/contacts. Again, this is athleticgreens.com/contacts to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance.
Elroy's Fine Foods, the Uncommon Market. A revival of the community market, promising you an uncommon shopping experience and the finest of groceries and prepared foods.
When Chloe and I first envisioned what Elroy's Fine Foods would become, we wanted to build a market that was focused on building community. A beautiful store that not only sells incredible foods, but also prioritizes environmental and social responsibility, and provides the community with a safe space to shop, eat, and hang out.
Elroy's Fine Foods is located in Monterey, California, offering the most delicious prepared foods, curated groceries, certified organic produce, a full-service bulk food section, fine cheeses, natural wines, local beers, and humanely raised meats and sustainably caught seafood. Elroy's Fine Foods, the Uncommon Market, 15 Soledad Drive, Monterey, California.
Welcome to the Contacts Coaching Podcast, dedicated to bringing you practical ideas from coaches, sharing what they have learned throughout their career. The show is designed to serve as a digital database of mentorship from a wide network of coaches whose innovative, reflective, and diverse knowledge may offer ideas to enhance your experience. In addition to sport-specific expertise, each episode also dives into the ways in which culture, strategy, and tactics can cross from one discipline to another. I'm your host, Justin Klein. Welcome back to the Contacts Coaching Podcast. We are joined today by Patrick Geiger, head lacrosse coach and athletic department assistant at St. Vider in Chicago, Illinois, where we just went for a week of lacrosse and had a great time. They took the time out of their day to host our team and have some fellowship after the game, which was great.
appreciate you coming here, Coach, to chop it up a little bit and for hosting us while we were there.
Yeah, Justin, it's unbelievable, man. It was great hosting you guys. You got a phenomenal group of young men, amazing staff. It was great having Portillo's after the game with the boys and your first experience with Jardiniere, which I hope you've tried it on pizza like I recommended. But it was fantastic, man. It's always great to get some out-of-state exposure, get some new programs. Kind of before the game, we were talking to you guys, and it sounds like you always do these trips each year to maybe align with some other states where, you know, the sport's still growing and just seeing what's out there. And it was awesome. It's always great to grow the fellowship. I always tell our boys, as you and I were laughing, when they're eating, it's like a high school dance. Our guys are over in one side of the room. Your guys are over here. And we tell them after the game, like, guys, go eat with them. You eat with these guys every day. Go have a new conversation. And by the end of the dinner, they were hamming it up. It was awesome watching them. You never know. One of those kids from Stevenson might make a trip out here to DePaul or Loyola or vice versa. We might have a boy go out to Cali somewhere and your roommate, your buddy's roommate. Yeah. Oh man, I played lacrosse at Stevenson, man. Remember when we played you guys? Like, I love that stuff in this game. I appreciate you guys doing that and taking the time to really be open and having some conversation. And obviously you extended the invite here and I'm just pumped, man. I'm pumped to have this opportunity.
Great. I'm looking forward to it. So why don't we dive in here and help the audience figure out who you are? If you could take us through your background, both as an athlete and a coach, how did you get into the profession? What was the process for landing your first job and then any subsequent jobs before you landed in the seat that you're in now?
Sure. So I was born in the northwest suburbs of Chicago, Elk Grove Village, and I was the youngest of three boys. And we were very much a baseball, basketball, football family, like every other family in the Midwest. Those three are what every young male does. It's just the Holy Trinity. And I ended up going to St. Vider High School. My oldest brother was the first to go, had a phenomenal experience. My parents fell in love with it. And I had two union labor working parents who, you know, it was definitely a sacrifice to send us to a private Catholic school, but they saw the value. They saw the experiences my brothers were having. And it was a no-brainer that I was going to follow suit. And I wanted nothing to do with St. Vider. I wanted to go to the public school. I wanted to stay with my buddies, but there was no shot. Mom and dad were sold and I didn't have much say as a 13-year-old young man. Went to St. Vider and it was the best decision of my life. It was such a phenomenal formational time. I was not the strongest academic student growing up. I struggled mightily. I had a few learning differences and was enrolled in a program at St. Vider called their Scanlon program, which works with students who have diagnosed learning differences. And that was phenomenal for me. That was something that I think it shaped me as just a general human being, but as an athlete, it really prepared me for what, you know, my future in athletics was going to be. A roundabout way to getting to athletics, I again came to Vider, jumped right into football, summer camp. Met my best friend who just recently moved to Chicago from Baltimore. And dad invites me over for barbecue in the middle of summer, go over. And his dad's got all these lacrosse goalie heads all over his basement. And I have no idea what lacrosse is. So I go into his house, like, oh man, your dad's a big fisherman. That's pretty cool. And he's like, dude, those are not fishing nets, man. Those are lacrosse sticks. And I was like, that's cool. What's lacrosse? Throws a DVD in. His dad actually played goalie at University of Maryland. Throws a DVD in, Maryland, Virginia, national championship game. And I am like hooked. Like, this is the coolest sport I've ever seen. And I'm like, you're telling me Vider has this? And he's like, yeah, man, that's why when we moved here, we kind of decided Vider was, you know, you guys had a lacrosse program. So lo and behold, just picked up a stick and the rest is kind of history. I just fell in love with it. I think being the first in my family of three boys, it was something new and kind of mine. So I latched onto it really quick and it was just a beautiful game. I fell in love with it. I liked the position. I played goalie. I kind of liked just being in my own world and kind of a lot of pressure. It was a lot of fun too. And we just had a fantastic coach. Bill Sanford was our head coach who ended up coaching at Vider for, I think, about 16 years. He retired my first year back at St. Vider, and we'll get to that journey of getting that position. But he was just a young, vibrant coach who came from the East Coast. He was a Jersey guy and just knew so much about the game. But I think since he was a younger coach, and some of us had older brothers that were almost around his age, I think we all just vibed and connected with him instantly. And he was an easy person to play for. He was definitely a hard ass, but in the best way, like tough, but fair, And it was just what our community needed. And he ended up getting us recruited. We went and played D3, you know, small D3 college ball. I played at Adrian College. My best friend played at Stevenson College out on the East Coast, ended up actually playing on their national championship program. And we had two others that committed. And it was really cool because we were the first kids to ever go and play at the next level. And you just saw this snowball effect after that, where in the Vider community, kids were like, oh, I can be a lacrosse player first, then a football player. I don't got to be a football guy, then a lacrosse guy. And it just shifted the dynamic. And it was really cool to be a part of that and kind of plant our flag. And obviously now the program's gone to completely different levels. And we go on a spring trip every year to Florida. We got kids going D1, you know, kids playing year-round club ball. Like, it's awesome. It's really cool to see where it's come. But yeah, ended up going and playing at Adrian, had a great experience there. Went to the tournament 3 out of 4 years. There's some really unique experiences there, again, that we'll touch on. I know you said the intros tend to be long-winded, so.
No, that's fine. That's great backgrounding, honestly, because it gives context to someone who is a novice in the sport at a late age, and then it becoming your passion and what you do now. So it's a cool story. I am curious a couple of things that we'll get to. One, about the idea of being a multi-sport athlete as you have grown up to where now you have kids playing year-round, and I want to dig into that. But before we do, you mentioned that your old coach retired in your first year back. So did you go from Adrian right back to St. Vider to help? What was that process? And did you coach anywhere in between, or was it just right back to the alma mater?
Sure. So right out of college, just did the commercial first year, 23 years old, took a job in medical sales, moved down to the city, followed suit. Ended up getting laid off that first job, which was a really eye-opening experience because there were people that have been in this company for 20, 25, 30 years getting laid off with me. They've got kids in college, they're bawling their eyes out. And I'm here as a 23-year-old where I'm just trying to figure out if I can get rent. And it allowed me to pivot, but I was still in the professional mindset. I had a family friend in digital marketing, went into digital marketing for about a year and a half, and just sitting behind a desk, I was going crazy. I hated it. It just didn't suit me. I stayed really close with my high school coach, Bill Sanford, and we'd always get together, get lunch, go out, I'd go to Vider games whenever I got a chance. And I just kind of grabbed his ear one day and was like, hey, like, how did you get where you're at? Like, you came to Vider when you were really young, you connected with us. I feel like that's something I want to do, that I'd be good at. And he's like, Gager, first of all, like, you got to go back and get a master's. And we both laugh because, again, I was not a strong student. I'm like, you know who you're talking to, dude, like a master's degree, like no way. And getting the wheels turning. And oddly enough, that night, Robert Morris University in the city, I go on a job board and they're hiring for a grad assistant for the men's lacrosse team. So I'm like, all right, this is a sign. This is pretty cool. I don't meet the requirements. My GPA wasn't high enough. I didn't really have like any of the prereqs. So I wrote like a 4-page, just mindless rant about who I am, my struggles. And now being 25, my appreciation for education and wanting to right my wrongs of going through the motions as a younger kid and not prioritizing education. Got a call back from the president, and she was extremely impressed with the letter and got accepted into Robert Morris's grad school. Jumped on board there, and my other GA, who was a 2-time All-American at RIT, went and played professionally from Canada. Unbelievable talent, like incredible. And he actually played growing up with a bunch of guys that I played college ball with. At Adrian, we had a big Canadian contingency. Just oddly enough, we were close to the border, so we just kind of got a lot of those boys. And I started getting Facebook messages. Hey, man, like I heard or see that you're going to RMU. My buddy MJ is going to go there. So we kind of had a little bit of a common ground before we started. And we're right at the same age. We're both 25 years old starting out. And the head coach at RMU within our first week resigned. So it's me and the other GA, me and MJ. 2 GAs taking over. And, you know, RMU was club. It wasn't, you know, like we were at a D1 program. So the AD pulls us in and she's like, we're not really going to hire from outside. We just got you guys in. We want to interview you both for the head coaching position. I stopped her right there and I go, look, if you don't make MJ the head coach, you're doing this program a disservice. Like, the kid was a genius, just really understood the game, very X's and O's guy. And I was very much a Jimmy and Joe's guy. I was a culture guy. That's what I did well, but I needed to learn the game a lot more. So MJ took over and every day just chilling in the office with him, watching film, just like watching his brain work. I was just like, holy cow, this is the best thing ever. Like, I lucked out finding RMU and getting MJ in here. This is really cool. So we were there for 3 years, ended up finishing grad school, really turned that program around. We were one win away from making nationals 2 years in a row. And it was a program that was maybe winning one or two games before we got there. It was just awesome. You had two guys that MJ played at RITU, who was competing for national championships, played in the pro league. So we were giving these kids like the greatest lacrosse experience that they never had. They were playing in high schools where maybe they didn't even have it in high school, not taken very seriously, ratty jerseys, whatever it might be. Like, we were trying to hook these kids up and give them the experiences that we had in college. Let's go on bus trips. Let's stay in hotels. Let's, you know, get them shooting shirts. Let's make them feel like they're legitimate college athletes. And that kind of sprungboard me into falling in love with coaching. I was like, this is what I need to do for the rest of my life. But I wanted to get back to the high school level. RMU happens, we graduate, and the AD goes, yeah, we can't really hire you guys on full time. I just got engaged. So I was like, all right, I got to go. I can't afford to do this anymore. Went and worked for Field Turf for a year. So traveled all over the Midwest, getting on planes every other day, going to Pittsburgh, Cleveland, Minnesota, sometimes down to Texas, and surveying turf fields all over the country. Really cool. Allowed me to talk to ADs, head coaches, be around athletics in a different capacity while I bridged the gap to getting back to a school. So worked for Field Turf for a year. And that summer, St. Lawrence High School on the south side of Chicago was hiring a new boys lacrosse coach. So went and interviewed and had a phenomenal interview. Tim Chandler is the AD over there. Amazing guy. Like, I would go to war for Tim Chandler. Like, he was awesome. Just really straightforward. I think he like even said to you, like, to be honest, like, your background, you of all the people that were interviewing, like, you definitely got the best pedigree. So it's kind of a no-brainer, but like, where are you at? And I told him, here's the thing. I'm working full time. If you want to run a successful program, I just want to be in the building. That's my goal. Like, I want to work in the building. And he's like, well, we don't have anything at the time. Unfortunately, I don't know if I can offer you the job. 2 days later, the all-girls school next door to them was closing and they were an all-boys school. Well, they were changing their ways and decided to go co-ed. So now they're going to get an influx of students. And I had an enrollment background and he goes, hey, like, I know you have this enrollment background. What are your thoughts since we're getting bigger, joining our enrollment team? I said, dude, show me where to sign. Let's fire it up. 4th of July weekend, get the phone call that I'm going to get the position. And was over the moon. Like, all right, here we go. First head coaching position, getting back into a high school, Catholic high school, south side. Like, this is right in my wheelhouse. Worked at St. Lawrence for a year, and it was one of the best years of my life. Sports brand new in this community. Football, basketball, baseball dominate the south side. That's what every kid does. Lacrosse is like nowhere to be found. So I come in. And the first thing is like, all right, culture, let's get these kids, let's give them this experience. Like, RMU, it was a great model. Let's get them new jerseys. Let's put a practice plan together, make them show up to workouts, put binders together, make them feel like they are premier perennial athletes. And I had an incredible first year there. And my phone rings again in the summer. And it's Jason Kuffel. He's the AD at Vider, but this was his first year. So this was 2019, gives me a phone call and he goes, hey, Gager, there's some things shifting here, some positions opening. Cause I had interviewed at Vider about 7 different times and got denied. And so he's like, hey man, like, some shifts are happening. I got an inside track on a position. Just want to put it in your ear. I think you should interview for it. It was an enrollment position. So again, like, in my wheelhouse. So I interview for it. I get the job. And that was tough. That was the first time in my career where I had to go into my boss's office. And I was like sick to my stomach because I really enjoyed St. Lawrence and I love the community. And I was ready to be there for eight, nine, 10 years. And I just, it's tough. Your alma mater calls and I love Vider. Like I bleed Navy and red. And when they call, you just got to go. And again, Tim Chandler is like, dude, I get it. Go to your alma mater. Like we'll root for you. I'll see you later. So I go to Vider and Bill Samford, who was our head coach, historic head coach, got the program to the level that it really is, decides that he's going to step down. And they're just having a tough go of finding, Bill had a really tough time just hiring somebody who wasn't all into the culture side, like really great, probably more impressive head coaches than me on paper from an X's and O's standpoint. But I think he was really nervous to hand the keys over to somebody who just didn't have a focus or a premium on culture. So they pull me into the office and they're like, hey, like it's September. We're already delayed in this process. We need to get somebody hired. And your name is at the top of the list. What do you think? And I think I cried. I laughed. I shot through the roof. And I'm like, yes. Yeah. Where do I sign? And they're like, well, go home, talk to your wife. Just make sure that this is a good decision for you guys. I go home and like, I tell Megan and she's like, yeah, like, where's the contract? And she doesn't even like bat an eye. So got the position at Vider and had 1 year of coaching and then the world completely changed.
Great. Let's stop you there. And here's why. I want to know in your transition from collegiate assistant to head coach at Lawrence with some time analyzing turf fields in between. What were the things you needed to figure out right away when you got into that head coaching seat? And it can just be a quick list like, hey, one, two, three, wasn't ready for this, figured it out. And then when you shifted to Vider back to the assistant role for a year and then back into the head coach, what did you learn at Vider that you needed to figure out? So if you could just hit like those two different stops and the assistant gig in the middle where you got to go back and learn a little bit and then reapply, what did that look like in each stop for our audience who may be in a similar situation going, what the hell did I get myself into?
So yeah, RMU was the best eye-opening experience. So that's where I was an assistant GA. And that is doing everything, right? And I listened to, you know, previous podcasts. And the one thing I love listening to other coaches who, you know, are older than I am and getting to the pinnacle of their careers is listening to what they did when they were assistant coaches. And it is doing laundry. We didn't have buses to take kids to games. So we're driving to Grand Rapids, Michigan, Indiana, Ohio, and it's me driving a van, 6 hours, 7 hours, booking breakfast, booking dinner, booking hotels, like everything. I wore every hat. We're recruiting and there's nothing I wouldn't do. And I loved it. And I'm still very much at that point in my career, even right now. So then I go to St. Lawrence and it was the same thing. It's you're doing apparel orders. You're booking team dinners for the guys. You're building the schedule out for them. You're trying to host summer camps. I'm wearing every hat I possibly can wear, sometimes to a fault because certainly you can't focus on every key area and give every part of yourself to that. Something's going to get preseason is a lot of culture driven. And then once the season starts, it's all X's and O's and trying to get the schematic stuff down. And then you lose the culture side a little bit because you just can't focus on it as much. And I was the only coach in the building. So it was tough. You're just trying to do everything. And you got kids coming into you and talking about home life and everything like that. So you're doubling as a counselor and you're just all over the map. So I go to St. Vider and this is now like probably the most well-oiled machine that I've been a part of in my coaching stint. And Bill was still in the building, but he was just stepping away from coaching. He had his third kid. His wife is a doctor and was blossoming in her career. So it was time for him to be like, you know, time to let my wife grow and me to just be a dad. And that was the greatest thing to happen to me, to have him in the building, because he was like a safety net. He's here. I'm going to tell you, I'm going to read your emails. I'm going to do all this stuff. And I'm going to be critical of you, like pretty tough, because I just want to get out in front of the mistakes that I made when I was your age. And that's been the best learning experience, because at first I would answer every single email within 2 minutes. I get an email and I immediately respond. And it was just driving me crazy because I felt if I didn't, I was failing somebody or just not being professional or whatever it might be. And Bill was like, dude, just calm down. You got to be thoughtful. Because here's the thing. I'm reading your responses and you're saying the right things, but I don't think there's like a mission behind what you're saying. And he's like, you're excited, you're energetic, and the kids love that. But why are you doing what you're doing? Why is this important? Why is this workout important? Why is this cultural service opportunity important? Think deeper. You're saying the right things and it's awesome, but I don't think the kids are like understanding why this is as deep as it needs to be. And that's been my turning point right now is as a head coach at a program that is typically a top five program in the state of Illinois and sending kids all over the country and getting kids recruited. Like, you just have to be a really critical thinker. You can't just really throw stuff at the wall and see if it sticks. You got to sit down and plan your culture initiatives all summer for a spring sport, right? Like, you got 6 months to really get the gears turning and be like, okay, this is what the team needs. This is the direction we need to go. And just being able to think deeper than, all right, we're going to have pasta dinners every Friday because that's just a cool thing to do. And again, I know this is a long-winded answer and we'll go deeper into that cultural stuff, but that's the development so far from RMU to here, you know, and I'm 32 years old. I just turned 32 yesterday. I'm blessed to be young and growing and watching my mistakes in real time and learning from them and getting opportunities to talk to people like you and other coaches and taking tidbits and seeing if they work.
Well, let's talk about that for a second. Let's do two things. What is a failure that has been a transformational learning moment for you in this particular role that has caused you to reevaluate how you approach things?
So last year, obviously with COVID, we returned to sports and we had a unique kind of circumstance in Chicago. So fall sports, football, which at a private Catholic school, we have a ton of dual sport athletes. 85% of our roster plays football. And they cancel the fall season. They push it into winter. Nothing's really happening. COVID's getting worse. Christmas, New Year's, it just spikes again. So then they push fall again into spring. So now the overlap with football goes 3 weeks into our lacrosse season. So I haven't had my lacrosse boys in a full calendar year. And now I get them back, but we're splitting time with football. And it is a nightmare. We've got kids trying to communicate with us and the football coaches saying, hey, these days I'm going to do lacrosse. These days I'm going to do football. I got a lift here. I got a game here. And you could just see the wear and tear on the kids. And admittedly too, for me, I got very frustrated and I had a woe is me attitude because we lost spring sports with COVID during the peak of it. And we're getting screwed over again in what we felt, obviously, as a spring coach. And any other coach, you insert whatever season that happened to them, they'd feel the same way. And I think just as a young, kind of excited coach, I got really upset and I wore my emotions on my sleeve. And our kids saw that. And we got so tunnel visioned with lacrosse that I think we forgot about why you play sports. And what was always important to me and what I preach to our Vider boys is like the experiences, right? The bus rides, the team dinners, the rainy 30 degree practices that you're laughing your butt off and like loving every minute of it. And I think we were just so hard on the guys and demanded like immediate perfection because we also lost a really talented team to COVID. We had 7 commits. 4 Division I, like we were just loaded. Everybody was predicting us to go to state. So I think we just were a young staff who was so tunnel vision on being a really good lacrosse team that I think we just forgot about the high school kids and what they were going through too. You know, I mean, no kids have gone through a global pandemic like this and tried to navigate it. So,
or adults.
Yeah. Oh yeah, certainly. Yeah. Cause like I'm saying right now, that was my failure. I think I failed the kids because I just don't think we put a premium on trying to help them get through this confusing time. It was more just like pound the table. We're getting screwed over. Mm-hmm. and we just got to come out firing and win games. Mm-hmm. And that was a big kind of look in the mirror self-evaluation process.
I love the answer simply because often as coaches, especially early career coaches, I don't want to say we forget, because I don't even know if we're aware that the burden on us to make the student the center of the equation is not taught well and not emphasized. And often we let adult problems get in the way of kids. But as you learned, which is a great example, and I appreciate you sharing that, it's when you put the focus on the kids' experience, often you're going to end up in the right place, regardless of what the scoreboard says. So I think that's super informative. And for people that are listening, how do you still chase success in the way in which you've been wired to do, but not at the expense of the student experience? And I think that one of the decisions we made out here, similarly, is that as a school, we only offered spring sports last year when we returned to campus for that reason. We didn't want to put the students in a position where they had to pick who to disappoint.
Right.
And I say all the time, we got lucky that our decision was the right one, even though in the midst of it, who knew if it was going to be. And so I think keeping that in mind is super important and leads me to follow up with this multi-sport athlete piece where you mentioned that 85% of your athletes play football. And I'm curious what percentage play a third sport and how do you support the students in that endeavor when the pressure on the outside or from the outside world and the noise is that you should specialize as early as possible, which as coaches, we all know that's not accurate in that most of your kids matriculating to college lacrosse are multi-sport athletes, even though the clubs would have you believe something different.
Yeah, and look at Jared Bernhardt. I don't know if you know his story, but he was a Twarton winner at Maryland and then transferred to Ferris State and won a Division II national championship and was the player of the year. And now he's going to go to the NFL draft. You know, I mean, this guy, best lacrosse player in the country.
Which really quickly, the Twarton winner is the equivalent of the football Heisman Award for correct. Those of you that aren't correct. Familiar with lacrosse.
Yeah. And it's funny because I don't know if this is going to be a continuing trend, but a few years prior, Pat Spencer at Loyola, Maryland wins the Twarton, then transfers to Northwestern and plays D1 basketball, like just unbelievable athletes. And so it's nice to have those kids in your sport to show these dual sport athletes like, hey, like you want to specialize, but man, look at the, like, the best players in this game, Paul Rabil, Wayne Gretzky of lacrosse, probably the most common name that general lacrosse fans know. Amazing basketball player growing up, loved it. And it's amazing to see like Wayne Gretzky played lacrosse like in Canada growing up. And it's easy to use those types of guys to lean on. It's a commercial thing to say, but I think the most important thing is you learn different gritty skills through different sports, right? Like you play football, you're getting knocked around. You're clanging pads. Like you just develop a different kind of athletic mindset. And then lacrosse is a very technical sport and you got to be more methodical and decisive in this game. And especially if you're like a linebacker or a receiver or safety, you can really develop some phenomenal skills that carry over and it almost makes you stronger in both sports. And the specialization thing is really tough right now. And it's such a hot thing, especially in Illinois. Like the kids see, oh, if I play lacrosse year round and I play club, like I'm going to guarantee a D1 scholarship. Like that's what they see because they see a handful of kids in Illinois do that. And that's the instant like latch onto.
Right. But meanwhile, lacrosse at the Division I level is not fully funded. I think they have 10 to 12 scholarships to split between 40 dudes. So like even that is misinformation from the clubs.
Yeah. Good. Yeah. Good luck. Like it's such a crapshoot. And just to say Biter's makeup, we're about 840 students. And what I love is like go play and sweat and give everything with your buddies in another sport. Because here's the thing. You might be an average football player, but you might be our best lacrosse player. Mm-hmm. And if those guys see you working your tail off and getting hit after hit and bouncing back up and just giving everything to the football program, when the clock shifts, and now they're coming to La Crosse, don't you want the same energy and effort given from your teammates? So at a small private school, you build that brotherhood of that guy's just a grinder, right? That kid, like, he was in football this year. Like, man, he was just a torpedo. Like, it wasn't great. It didn't start for us, but like, that kid gave everything. So now when I come to La Crosse, like, I'm not going to, you know, half-ass it. I'm going to give you every inch of me. And it's awesome. Like, we preach that all the time. And it's easy being a Vider alum and being a football and lacrosse guy. Like, yeah. I know the dynamic. So when you give the real world experiences and you can touch on it and talk to the families and you're backing it up, it makes that a little bit of an easier decision, but it's certainly hard.
Yeah. You know, it's, well, it is when you're dealing with outside noise that you can't control, but I appreciate the way you approach that and sharing those specific examples of how it translates. Let me ask you this. I just popped into my head. What is the most unexpected sport one of your athletes plays where you have seen a translation of skill set to being a better lacrosse player?
I'll say right now, especially with you being a basketball guy, basketball players are my like pride and joy. I wish we could get our entire basketball team on the lacrosse field, because you put them on the defensive side, best defenders on the lacrosse field. They cut the field in half, force them to the sideline. They know when a screen's coming, when to switch, when not to. Like, they're very intuitive and they get it. Like, they know how to give a little bit of a cushion when needed or when to press. It's certainly not surprising. I'm trying to think, you know, if there's ever been just like a...
Well, while you're thinking about it, here's a story I heard one time where a former ice hockey player joined, when they moved here, our water polo team, and instantly was the Draymond Green of the team in regards to facilitation, because they understood the hockey assist and how to move the ball, and they saw two steps ahead. And so something as strange as that, I don't think gets enough attention, especially in the sports specialization era.
You know what? I use this all the time because I love golf, but I am terrible. And golf is probably the greatest game for every athlete to play, because it is such a mental game. Because as soon as that tee shot goes off into the woods and you're pissed, the next shot's terrible. The next shot after that's terrible, and snowballs. And some of the best players we've had are dual sport. They play golf. And the reason they are is they've got the memory of a goldfish, right? Like, they, you know, shoot a bad shot, like a possession shot or bad turnover. Like, they know how to just get it out of their head and go to the next play. So that would maybe be a little more of a unique transition.
For sure.
You know, certainly not anything athletically that they maybe gain, but certainly mentally, you can see the sharpness in a lot of those guys.
No, that's a great example. And again, people don't necessarily think about that. And the follow-up I have for that is, as you navigate the athletic department as an assistant in the athletic office, as you go and talk to your colleagues who are coaches in other sports, what have you learned watching other sports that you've been able to apply to your role as a lacrosse coach? Meaning, I saw the volleyball team do this, and that day I went and put that in at practice, even though it wasn't lacrosse related.
Yeah. It's funny that you say that, because our girls volleyball program has been one of the more perennial teams in our building for the last couple of years. And their head coach, Charlie Curtin, has been around for a long time. And I would announce their games. I'd do the PA and everything. So I'd see how they warm up. And I love just their dynamic as a team, like their pregame in the locker room, whatever chant they do, like getting each other fired up, but like their practices, like when they get a point, the team goes nuts just in practice. And I talked to Charlie and I'm like, how do you manufacture that energy every day? Cause that's the hardest part with us, especially being a spring sport in Chicago. Most of our practices are 30 degrees cold. It's tough to get the kids really into it every day. And his thing is, like, he tries to almost take a little bit of a step back and let them be goofy, or if they love a drill, okay, we'll keep doing that. Like, we don't maybe need to go on to this next thing. Maybe you just need to keep rolling in that, because you guys are vibing with each other and the energy's good. And so this year, certainly, I've stolen that, where I'm trying to give the kids kind of the keys more and really take ownership of the program, because you got to remember, once the game starts, you're irrelevant. You can't stop practice. You can stop the drill, coach, do whatever. When a game happens, they got to make those decisions and they got to vibe with each other and they got to communicate. So we've really tried this year to pull back from being micromanaged coaches to just letting them have a little freestyle to their game. Mm-hmm. And that's brought the energy up too. Mm-hmm. They love drills and they get into it. And we put a scoreboard on drills, first to seven, first to 10. And they get so competitive, man. Overs D, like D wins, offense has got to go run wherever, go to the park, this, that. Mm-hmm. And they're doing the bye, see you later, like chirping each other. And we love it. It's great. It's really been a cool dynamic.
Yeah. It's funny with volleyball, because often when you watch it, they celebrate just as much when they lose a point and you're like, what are you doing? But it's like that constant energy and positive attitude that I think is transferable across the board. And I love that you stole that from there. What would you say if I asked you to identify a singular thing that is specific that you think has the largest ripple effect on the culture that you have obviously tried to build from all of your stops, but that if you were to go somewhere else, you would take with you as a foundational piece?
I know that this is kind of general, maybe not the strongest answer, but just genuineness, I guess, if that's how you want to define it. But what I've always done in my short professional career is just always shared my story. Mm-hmm. So like, I don't try and wow kids. Like, I played very mid-level college lacrosse. My resume is not going to knock you down, but I love coaching and I love working with high school kids. And I just love athletics. I love the lessons that you learn from it. And I think what I do a good job of, or at least what I try to do, is I share my mistakes and my shortcomings as much as I share my successes. Mm. Like, I was the kid who failed a lot of tests and was flirting with eligibility. Like, mm-hmm. I was in the dean's office, not for really bad things. Like, I was a little bit of a class clown. I think it's good for the kids to see that I was 17, 18 years old once. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I forget who said that phrase. It was definitely like a sports podcast I listened to, but he goes, my favorite thing to remind kids is, look, I was 16, 17, and 18. Mm-hmm. You've never been 30. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I know things and I've seen things that you haven't. Mm-hmm. So let me share that with you. Like, I'm not going to be the old guy up in a soapbox, certainly. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm sharing this stuff with you and really opening up, because like, I had my girlfriend break up with me a week before prom. I've had this, you know, like, mm-hmm. we share this stuff and I get it. And I want you to feel like you can share that stuff. Cause for me, like, that was Bill Sanford. Like, I go into his office and whether it was tears, laughs, whatever, we shared that stuff. And I mm-hmm. want you to feel like I can be that person. And if I'm not, let's find that person who is and get you in that headspace. So I think just don't feel like you got to come in and be Coach K, be Bill Belichick, be Saban. Like, you can learn from those guys and don't be afraid to learn from those guys. Don't think that they have it all figured out. Like, they got to change stuff every year. Years, a new team and a new makeup, and always be you, because that's the one thing that's going to stay the same. But then from there, just figure out how you're going to craft each year and connect with a different group of kids.
Yeah, I like that. And I think there's another cliche there, right? Like, some to the effect, always be you because everybody else is taken, or something like that. But it's a good reminder. And I think the other piece that goes without saying, but in case people didn't hear it, is the relational component of coaching outweighs any of the X's and O's things. And I think that's super important. If you don't know your kids, they're not going to trust you. And if you do go out of your way to meet them where they are, you're going to have a lot greater impact, not just on the field, but in their lives. Let's wrap with this, Coach. What is something that you have most recently changed your mind on? Meaning, I used to think this, and now I'm over here, and here's why. And it doesn't have to be lacrosse related.
I was just going to say, it's more, I have shifted from X's and O's to Jimmy's and Joe's wholeheartedly. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to give my assistant coaches a plug here, because they'd kill me if I did not give them a shout out, because they're brilliant lacrosse minds. Like, they coach lacrosse year round. Both of my assistants are directors of club programs in the state of Illinois. So they do lacrosse 365. And it's been the best thing for me because I used to be the D coordinator and the head coach. Mm-hmm. So my hats were changing constantly. Mm-hmm. You know, it was try and impress guys with your lacrosse knowledge, but then also bring the hammer down and be the head coach. Mm-hmm. And the best thing I've ever done now is I'm finally at a stage where I feel like I'm truly a head coach, where I'm putting a premium on the team first, our guys first, their experiences, their home life, their school life, and just making sure that they're loving what they're doing. Mm-hmm. So when we go to practice, you know, and it's been good because I've put a lot on my assistants too. Cause I am like, look, like you guys are running the show when it comes to the on field, right? You got the defense, you got the offense. I still run certain phases of the game, but yeah, I think as I'm getting older, I understand that you just, like I said, at St. Lawrence, right? Like you try and do all this amazing stuff, something's going to give. And now I realize in order to have a successful program and get kids to buy in and execute the on-field stuff, they gotta love coming every day. And the way you love that is you build great culture. Yeah. And I would definitely recommend for young coaches listening to this, find amazing assistants that you love hanging out with too, because the boys see that, or girls, your kids see that. And when you mesh with your assistants and you're hanging out outside of just coaching and you're cracking jokes and you're almost acting like a kid again around them, it changes the whole dynamics. Yeah, just putting more of a premium on the boys and I was really making sure that the culture is just always there.
Well, I love the answer. It's not the first time I've heard it, that delegation as a head coach is one of the most important assets in figuring out what your strengths are so you can hire your weaknesses, but also almost adopting the football mentality of I have coordinators that do these things and I manage. I'm almost a general manager. And it's like, I've been trying for years to figure out how to do that in basketball. And I think I'm getting close. So appreciate that advice. It's a great reminder and appreciate you taking the time to sit with me and share your knowledge.
Absolutely, Justin, man, this has been awesome. I love what you're doing. I can't wait to listen to more of these on the drive to and from work. Also, shout out to Diedrich Taylor. He was the first one that I listened to and some great stuff. I'm going to steal one of his quick little tidbits was, as an assistant, you think you have all the answers. As a head coach, your answers are now decisions. And I love that. That was awesome. Appreciate you turning me on to this and letting me be a part of it. And I wish you guys the best for the rest of your lacrosse season and just keep doing what you're doing, man. This is really great stuff.
Appreciate that. And I'll give you one more of DT's points that he shared, which was you are 100% responsible for the energy you bring to the space. So those are things we can control. And thanks for bringing that up. And we will definitely talk soon.
Hell yeah, buddy. Appreciate it. Have a good rest of your week.
This podcast was also brought to you by ttroops.com. As coaches, our inboxes get flooded with noise on how to make your program better. TeachHoops.com will get you focused on what needs to get done. One thing you've heard from these podcasts is no matter the experience, you got to keep pushing yourself to be better. Coach Steve Collins will help you direct that noise. He is there to help you. He has the credentials as a coach, and he's never turned down a Teach Hoops member. Sign up for a plan at TeachHoops.com and mention us at checkout. This site is here simply to help you be better. Take advantage and see you on the court. Remember, go to teachhoops.com. Drink Element is a healthy alternative to sugary electrolyte drinks. Each grab-and-go stick pack replaces essential electrolytes with no sugar, no coloring, no artificial ingredients, or any other junk. Element is thrilled to be releasing a new limited-time flavor this November. Element Milk Chocolate. I drink Element every day to support my workouts and being on the court and in the classroom. As a member of our community, Element has a special offer for you. Claim your free Element sample pack. You only cover the cost of shipping. Get yours today at drinkelement.com/contacts.